Well, good morning. Welcome back to day two of the Windows 8 UX Design Jumpstart. I'm Chris Mayo.
I'm Brandy Porter.
And on day two, we're going to be covering a lot of great topics, kind of building on what we started yesterday with day one, kind of going through the design of the Contoso Cookbook app, looking at the UX design principles, the UX guidelines, and building on top of those. So through the course of the first day, you probably have a pretty good understanding of some of the basics of, you know, layout and UI elements and
Snapping and scaling.
Yeah, snapping and scaling and so on. So now we're going to take, you know, a deeper look at some of the more, for me, compelling opportunities for design, especially in integrating into the experience of Windows 8. So here's the agenda for day two. The first session, we're going to talk about charms, contracts, and extensions. And this is all about implementing features behind the charms bars, so search and share and settings. As well as other contracts like the file open picker, file save picker contracts, and then different extensions like audio and contracts and stuff, or contacts. From there, Brandy's going to talk about tiles and notifications and creating a great experience for the start screen. After that, we'll talk about touch, and we'll go through how to create a great experience that works for not only touch devices, but also for devices that have a mouse and keyboard. From there, we'll talk about adding motion to your UIs, and this not only adds a little bit of visual interest and a little bit of emotion to your apps, but it also is an opportunity to communicate something to your users via animation. And at noon, Pacific Standard Time, for us, wherever you are in the world, you'll need to account for that accordingly. We'll take a meal break, and this will be an hour just to give everybody a chance to, you know, maybe catch up on some email or follow up on some tweets or grab something to eat. From there, we'll come back and we'll talk about accessibility, so creating apps that are accessible to all users. After that, we'll talk about globalization, and since we're selling apps in the Windows Store, and the Windows Store is all over the world, just like Windows is used all over the world, we'll talk about creating globalized apps that are available to everybody, regardless of, you know, what their language is or what their region or
you know,
what country, currency, and so on. And then finally, we'll wrap up with the Windows Store. So how do I get my app into the Windows Store? What are some of the opportunities for me around monetization? What information do I get from the Windows Store, you know, once I've published an app to kind of help me fine-tune the experiences and see where I'm doing well or maybe, you know, places that I need to make changes and so on. So let's go ahead and dive right into charms, contracts, and extensions. And what we had talked about yesterday during the first session is there's, you know, an incredible opportunity for you to create a unique and compelling experience within your Windows 8 app. And there's also some opportunities for you to integrate into Windows 8 experiences like the Charms Bar or like the audio controls for Windows 8. And this session is all about what are those opportunities and then how do you design compelling, compelling experiences around them that just feel like an extension of Windows 8 but still take advantage of or reinforce your grayed out statement and reinforce your user scenarios and the features that support those user scenarios within your apps.
And even reinforce your brand as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about charms, contracts, and extensions. And what I had talked about yesterday when I showed a couple of examples of these is how these are really just core elements of the expected Windows experience. People within the first few moments of using Windows 8, they're going to grab the charms bar, they're going to be doing searches, they'll be using, you know, some of the built-in apps, they're going to be sharing information, and they're going to expect great experiences behind these particular, these charms. And if you provide a great experience behind them, it's going to increase the usage of your app and it's going to increase the satisfaction with your app. You know, if someone goes to share something from your app and either there's no experience there or the experience that you have maybe isn't a high quality experience or a compelling experience, people are going to go look for another app to fill that scenario, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a bit of a letdown. So there's two different opportunities. One is contracts, which are built into Windows, built into the SDKs. They give you an opportunity to create really an app ecosystem where this is about apps working together. So I'm in IE10, I want to share a story, I'm going to share it to the email app. Mm-hmm. The other is extensions, which allows you to extend a Windows experience. So one of the best examples of this that we're going to talk about today is the file open picker experience. So we're all used to being able to open files, you know, from the file system, from, you know, the local disk on my machine. But with the file open picker, you can actually participate in that as an app, so people could pick files, you know, from your actual application. And we'll look at examples of that, not only example of what it does, but how do you design for it. So here's some examples of contracts. You know, some of these live behind the charms bar, like you see here in the slide, like search and share and devices and settings. And others of them live behind actions like opening a file or saving a file. So you can see here the various contracts like search, share, devices, settings, file open picker and file save picker. Again, not only, these are dialogues for opening and saving files, but again, you can do that to and from apps. Mm-hmm. The play to example, like being able to play a music file or a video file to your Xbox. Again, it's just contracts that you can participate in to enable these app-to-app scenarios.
Yeah, it really allows users to accomplish many, many tasks from whatever app that they're using currently.
Yeah, and in a way that would be really difficult to do if you were, you know, kind of hard-coding a relationship between apps. You build to the contract, and that gives you the ability to enable that scenario for any other app that implements that contract. So it's really, really compelling. Some examples of extensions. Probably the easiest one to think about is that the audio extension. So when you're playing a music file and you hit the volume button, mm-hmm. you know, you can see that little tile up in the upper left-hand corner that shows like the album art and the title of the song and stuff like that. That's a great example of if you're an audio app and you're playing audio, you can supply information to Windows via the audio extension to support and integrate into that experience from your app. So autoplay, background tasks, camera settings, the contract picker, so being able to pick, contact picker, so being able to pick contact information from your app within another app, like an email app and something mm-hmm. like that. So great examples of being able to extend a Windows experience with your app. And that's why they're called extensions. So let's dive right in and start talking about the share contract. And share is just a great example of an expected experience. Yep. People share things every day, and you know, from the apps that they love, they share things. They share the things they love via email. You know, emailing a photo or sharing a story or an article on the web that they thought was really compelling via social networks like Facebook and LinkedIn and so on. And not only that, but people often want content from one app and another app. So, you know, I've got an image that I want to, you know, include in a blog post. Mm-hmm. And this app-to-app sharing or sharing information between apps is another great example of a share scenario. So what the share contract provides is a super lightweight and in-context experience for share. And the thing that's really, really compelling about it is that it's done in such a way that you implement the share contract either as a source, so sharing information to another app, or as a target, so accepting information from another app. And all you need to know is that contract and build a great experience around that contract. You don't need to know anything about the other app. And it automatically provides this app-to-app ecosystem experience that's super, super compelling without having to, again, hard code, you know, a lot of different APIs into your app or to have, you know, a bunch of different buttons for each social network in your app. And we'll look at an example of that here in a second. In fact, let's go ahead and look at Contoso Cookbook. So I'm going to go over to Contoso Cookbook. I'll go into the Steam Bun Bouse recipe, and then I'm going to go ahead and just like any user would do, like from any Windows app, I'm going to hit the share button. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to share this email. I'm going to share this recipe via email. So let's say that I want to email this recipe to my friend because I, you know, made it and loved it, and I think they will too. Well, here's a couple of things. So I've implemented the share contract. So when the user goes ahead and grabs the share charm, Windows supplies a list of all the different apps that can accept the data that I'm sharing. So in this simple example, it's mail and Twitter. I'm sharing some HTML, mm-hmm. An HTML representation of the recipe. And then you can see here, when I pick an app like mail, it actually launches the mail app. And Windows passes the information from the share source, to the share target app. So what we had done is we had supplied information about, actually in HTML, information about, what is this recipe title, an image, a subtitle, a description, a link to our app in the Windows Store. Mm-hmm. So that gives us an opportunity to kind of encourage people as they're sharing to try our app. And I can add a message here.
And notice that you have not left Contoso Cookbook.
Yeah, that's one of the really compelling things about it is it's in context of my app. So I'm providing a great share experience, and I'm keeping people in my app. And now this mail app is acting as the share target app. So it's accepting the information and doing something in it, doing something that's specific to, my app scenario. So mail is all about, sending and reading mail. So what's the best way to interpret that shared information? Yeah. Create a new mail from it. And then I send off that mail. And there it goes. And then I'm back in my information, or I'm back in my application, continuing to use it, right?
Following the same flow that you were.
Exactly. So another example of doing a share is, let's go to my desktop. I had taken a photo when I made Steam Bun Baus last time. And let's say that I wanted to share this to Contoso Cookbook. So I had a photo of the last time that I made it, and also my friends could see this activity. So again, that social aspect of Contoso Cookbook.
I think that adventure deserves some bragging rights, for
exactly,
sure.
Exactly. So I want my friends to know about it. So again, I'm in the Photos app looking at this photo. I want to share it to Contoso Cookbook to kind of save for posterity and bragging rights the fact that I made Steam Bun Baus. And I'm going to go ahead and pick from the list of target apps, Contoso Cookbook. So at this point, Contoso Cookbook is the share target. And again, we provided a UI experience here around picking, helping users navigate to exactly the recipe that they want to share that photo to. Right? So if I say Steam Bun Baus and click Share, let's go ahead and close that app, go back to Contoso Cookbook. Back to Steam Bun Baus. I'm sorry. Let's go back to Steam Bun Baus. And then here you can see there's that recipe that I had just shared. So I'd taken from the Photos app, I had a photo of something I made, and I wanted to include it in the app. And it's just as easy as doing a share, right? So acting as a share target, I could accept that information and process it but build an experience around that in an app-specific way. And what's the right way to do that for Contoso Cookbook? Well, it's all about what recipe would I provide, or what recipe do I want to save that photo to? Okay, so that's share source and share target. Now, let's take some of that magic and kind of deconstruct it into what do I need to do as a designer to create some compelling experiences that really reinforce not only my great at statement, but launch my user scenarios and result in more use of the app, right? So here's what I need to think about as a designer. I need to think about being a share source and being a share target. Because again, if I only implement source, I'm kind of leaving some money on the table as far as an opportunity for people to use my app, right? So as a share source, I need to think about throughout my app and on each page or in each scenario, what could I be sharing right now? What would I want to happen if the user grabbed the share charm?
Yep.
And if I don't do anything, if they grab the share charm, it's just going to say, your app can't share, your app doesn't support share. And that's, again, going to be a letdown. So, for example, if I'm a share source and I'm on a recipe, maybe I want to package up that recipe information and supply that to Windows so it can build a list for me of target apps. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. As a share source, I'm going to package up information. On a recipe page, I package up a recipe to be able to share that.
And we were pretty strategic about packaging that up, too.
Yeah.
We wanted to draw people back into the app. We wanted to make sure that more and more people learned about Contoso Cookbook. We didn't want to give away the recipes via email because we knew that our app was a really compelling experience.
Right.
So we wanted to draw people back.
Yeah, and that link to Contoso Cookbook in the store, you could do things like have a file protocol so it could automatically open the recipe in Contoso Cookbook if you have it, or provide a link so people could go to the app in the store, right,
exactly.
And go and grab it. So it's a great way to not only build a great user experience, but kind of honestly advertise and turn more people onto your app, right?
Which is the goal.
Yeah, exactly. We want as many people to use our app as possible and to be super, super happy, you know, and tell their friends about it and download it and rate it, you know, very highly and so on. Okay. So I act as a share source. I package up that information. I pass it off to Windows. So Windows actually provides the Windows share pane, and that is Windows UI. It Windows knows when you share that information via the share contract, what kind of information it expects it. It builds a list of apps that can accept that kind of a data or that type of data. And then when a user picks an app, that launches the share target application, right? If it's not already running, it's going to launch it. And this is just, you know, another piece of UI or another page within your app. In this example, the mail app is acting as a share target, right? And again, I want to design a share target experience that makes sense for my particular app and to reinforce my scenario. So the mail app is all about creating a great mail experience. What's the right thing to do when people share information to that app as a share target? It's to create a new mail for it and make it as easy as possible to take that information and share it as a mail. Okay, so let's talk about building a share source experience. And when I'm in my application, I'm looking at my scenarios and thinking about my scenarios, share source design is really about, for each page or for each scenario, what could I be sharing right now that would provide a great experience for my app? So in Contoso Cookbook, for example, we went through and on the hub screen, let's get rid of that. For the hub screen, we wanted to share just a screenshot, a link to the app, and a description of the app itself, right? Because, you know, I don't have any data in particular selected at that point. For a hub or a collection page, like the Chinese cuisine page, we either wanted to select or take a selected item and share that particular information. So you could select a recipe and say share, or just provide a message to the user prompting them to select an item. We could have also just provided, you know, a share experience around, hey, this is the Chinese cuisine pack and here are the recipes in it. And again, providing a link to the app in the store. And then for a detailed page like the recipe page, we wanted to share that actual content for Steam Bun Baus, and that's what we did. But the thing that you want to think about in share source design is, what is the right share scenario? What could I be sharing right now to provide my users a great experience so when they go and grab that charm, they have a great experience and they have a great impression of my app?
Yeah, what do they expect to be able to share?
Right.
And what's going to be a valuable addition to that share experience?
Exactly. So when I'm planning my share experience and I'm planning my share source scenario, I need to think about data formats. And if you look at the list of data formats here, you can share plain text, you can share URIs, HTML, formatted text, bitmaps, files, or even custom data formats. And honestly, you want to implement, you want to have your dev team implement as many of these different formats as possible, because that kind of does, when Windows does the matchmaking with the share target application, it does it by inspecting this data and building a list of the apps that can accept it, right? So you want to create as many opportunities for the user to be delighted and excited about the share experience as humanly possible, right? So look at this list and think about how you can take each one of those share opportunities and build a scenario for, or build a data format, or implement the data format for that. So one of the cool things that you can do is even implement custom data formats. So for Contoso Cookbook, maybe if we wanted to enable sharing recipes back and forth between recipe apps, or letting you, you know, import recipes from another recipe application, we could implement schema.org slash recipe. So if you go to schema.org, they have schemas specified for a bunch of different data types or data formats. This is the one for recipe. Maybe we could implement that and enable to, you know, a recipe sharing feature. So share source guidelines, let's talk about what you need to do when you're designing this experience. So first, don't provide alternative ways to invoke share. Again, that's going to end up being Chrome on your UI, and it's going to be, you know, kind of one, redundant and maybe confusing to your users.
Yeah.
Hey, should I share via the charm or should I share via this button?
Does it do the same thing?
Right. And then you're going to have to train your users on, you know, how to invoke that share experience and what that icon or button means. And
they've
stuff
already
like
learned how to share through the Windows 8 ecosystem.
Right.
So take advantage of the learning that they've already done. via Windows 8.
Leverage what they already know and what they're already comfortable with, right? So you also want to provide hints to complete the share scenario. So if I was on a cuisine page and I wanted to provide a share experience for that page, and I wanted to share recipes, at that point I'd want to give via the share pane a hint on what you need to do to complete the scenario. So if no recipes are selected, I would show in the share pane, by the way, select a recipe, and you'd be able to share that. So just to provide them a hint. Whenever possible, or actually just all the time, respect user selections and preserve the context of the app. So the share experience is very, very lightweight. I'm in a recipe, I share to email or share to the People app or share to Twitter, and then I'm back to doing whatever I was doing in Contoso Cookbook or I was doing in the Source app. So just make it really, really lightweight and friction-free to encourage users to share, right, and to have a great experience for it. So again, some user guidance here. This is the experience that you want to provide to kind of hint to users that there's nothing to share right now. Select some photos or select a recipe, you know, if you want it to try again. Mm-hmm. If there's further action needed, you know, give them a hint. Tell them what they need to do, again, because you want them to complete the scenario and have a great experience. Yep. Okay, next let's talk about being a share target. So share target design is all about deciding what data formats I want to accept in my app, right? And then what do I want to do with those data formats? So if I'm accepting a bitmap or I'm accepting, you know, a schema for a recipe, what's the right scenario to implement for that? Honestly, to kick off one of your user scenarios or one of your user flows. So sharing pictures kicks off a new what's new across your social graph, so all of your friends.
Yep.
So obviously accepting pictures is a good one. You have the ability in Contoso Cookbook to add recipes, so maybe we want to implement the recipe schema, so you could accept a new recipe from another app and have that imported into the My Recipes group within Contoso Cookbook. And then design a share target experience or UI around each of those scenarios. And that's what we're going to be talking about over the next couple of slides.
Yeah, and that's when you can really start to think about how a user is going to be using your app. Think about the context that they might be coming from when they're trying to share to your app. Are they in their Photos app? And if they are, then make sure that the share experience is a really guided experience and that it's very obvious as to what they should be doing with that photo that they want to share.
Yeah, it should be super, super lightweight. It, again, should feel
organic.
Yeah, organic and familiar to the users of your app. So here's an example. When you look at the share pane experience, you know, I'm in a recipe and my share pane just looks like just another page within my app. It has consistent branding. It has consistent UI and UX around it. So, you know, as people are using the app, they're automatically familiar with the user scenarios of my app. They're going to know that when they grab that picture and say share, it's going to guide them through the process, and it's going to be very, very quick and lightweight. So again, make it the share pane experience match not only the look and feel and branding of your app, but also, you know, the navigation and the UX around your scenario. Mm-hmm. So users will just know what to do.
Yep.
Okay, so when I'm designing my share pane, I have two choices. One is 346 pixels or 646 pixels, and this is really around just supporting the screen real estate you need for your scenario. When you're building a share target experience, you know, there's a couple of guidelines that are going to help you do this successfully. First is provide a preview. This is a launch of your app like we had seen in the Mail app, but it's just that one lightweight experience. So you want to provide a preview that gives the user comfort as to what's going to happen, right? So users should know the result. Like in this page, I'm sharing the steam bun baos recipe. When somebody clicks on that send mail photo, they should be comfortable that the result of that is going to be I've sent a mail with this data in it.
Exactly.
You want to keep the interactions and navigation very, very simple. This is, you know, even at 646 pixels, it's a very, very small screen. It's not a lot of real estate. So I want to keep that experience very, very simple, keep the navigation simple, because I want it to be a very, very quick and lightweight experience. I want the user to feel like, oh, I should, you know, share this to Contoso Cookbook. And
it's going to be really easy to do.
Yeah, and it really, really easy to do, because as it gets easy and it's a fun and lightweight experience, they're going to just do it more, right? So, and then acknowledge user actions. When they hit that send button or they hit that share button, communicate back to them that, you know, the email's being sent or the photo's being added to, you know, Steam Bun Bows.
That they were successful.
Yeah, exactly. So quick links are another option that you have within your design. It gives you kind of a customized user action that you can use to encourage further sharing in your app. You can see here on the right-hand side in the share pane that we've added a quick link for Contoso Cookbook. So if the user, you know, shares something to Contoso Cookbook, and the next time they want to do that, they can just tap right on it and automatically, you know, for the mail app, it would say, you know, share something to Chris Mayo. In fact, I think that's the one that I'd use to share to send myself that email. But for Contoso Cookbook, you know, it could share it to like the Steam Bun Bows recipe again or something like that. So be descriptive. Make sure the user knows what shortcut that's going to take as far as, you know, for the mail app, filling in the two, or for Contoso Cookbook, selecting a particular recipe, and provide, you know, a thumbnail so they know visually what app it is.
Yeah, that ties right back into the tile that you see on the start screen and then the logo within the app.
Right. Okay. So that's share. So people want to share things. This is just something we naturally as humans just
especially
love
food
to do.
Photos.
Yeah, exactly. Food photos and yummers, right? And so you want to provide a great share experience. And think about not only being a source. So in my app, during the scenario, if the user grabs the share charm, what do I want to provide like as just share experience? As a share target, I also want to think about if the user shared these types of information to my app, what would I want to do? What user scenario could that kick off to, again, increase the usage, increase the satisfaction with my app? And the great thing about the share contract and all the contracts is I implement the contract either as a source, as a target, and then I can participate in this app ecosystem with any other app that participates in that contract. So for share as an example, if I implement a share source for bitmaps, I can work with any app that works with bitmaps. If I do that same thing for targets, I can be a target for any app that works with bitmaps.
Yep.
Okay. So Windows does all the heavy lifting for you. All you have to do is implement the contract. It takes care of, you know, doing the matchmaking between what you're sharing in the target app or providing you as a target app, you know, the opportunity and the data, and then you just react to it within your app.
Yep, just like so many other things with Windows 8, they've made it really easy to implement the share contract and other contracts and extensions within the system.
Yeah, for me, it's just really about what's the right experience for me to design for my app. Like all of the things specific to the contract, Windows does for me, and then I just need to think about creating a compelling experience.
Yep.
And that includes both being a share source. So what do I share within my app, you know, from page to page or within user scenarios, and then also being a share target.
Yep.
What can I accept in my app as far as share data that could kick off some of my user scenarios, right? And again, increase the usage of my app and increase the satisfaction of my app. And that's what these really, for me, what these contracts are about. You know, if I participate in that share target experience and someone is looking to share a photo of something, you know, that they made or wants to share, you know, a great article, and I'm a social app. I mean, when users find my app in that list and they launch it, that's a launch of my app, and that's usage of my app, and it can increase the satisfaction if I create a great experience.
And it's a commitment and a loyalty that is being built towards your app. So.
Yeah. They'll have an affinity for it.
Yep.
Okay. So that's share. Let's talk about search. So, helping users find the great information or content within your app is a really almost just a default scenario now.
Yeah.
Users just search. They're so used to...
They expect it.
Yeah, I'm looking for, you know, a great travel destination. I'd like to learn more about this city. You know, tell me news about, you know, the city I'm traveling to. They search. And we thought this was such a compelling experience for Windows that we built it into you know, we built it into the charms bar and just expected it, you know, users just have a high affinity to the experience and they expect it that we just put it there on the charms bar and made it available to every single app. And let's look at this as an example within Contoso Cookbook. So I'm going to go on my desktop and switch back to Contoso Cookbook. And let me just go back to the home screen. So I'm in Contoso Cookbook and I'm looking for a recipe, let's say. So I'm just going to go ahead and grab the search charm. And the first thing you're going to notice is I'm doing an in-app search, right? So you can see at the top that it says Contoso Cookbook. There's a little hint within the search bar to tell me what kind of searches I can do in Contoso Cookbook. So I can search for recipes, ingredients, or friends. As an example, I'll type in Tom. And there you can see that I get a couple of query suggestions, like a large tomato or my friend Tom. And I could go ahead and just tap on those and go directly to those results. But what I wanted to show here is providing a UI around search is really what you're going to be designing, is thinking about what are people going to be searching for in my app and what UX can I provide around helping them zero in on exactly the results they want as quickly as possible. Yeah. So for example, if someone searches for Tom, they might mean, you know, recipes with Tom in the title, like the tomato sauce that you see here. They might mean their friend Tom, right? And or they might mean any recipes that have, you know, tomatoes or tomatillos in in the ingredients list. So here's the search page for Contoso Cookbook, where I've provided some filtering to help people zero in on exactly what they want. Are they looking for recipes? Are they looking for their friends? Are they looking for ingredients? So when you're designing this experience, it's all about what can I do to help people find exactly the content they're looking for, right? To kick off one of my scenarios, like them going and making a recipe. Right? And it's really interesting if I go back to, let's say, the homepage, and let's say that I was an Internet Explorer and I was looking for, you know, recipes for, you know, let's say fried rice or something along those lines. Here I'm doing, you know, a search within, you know, IE10. And I'm searching for maybe rice recipes. And then I remember that Contoso Cookbook is an awesome app that I've been using for, you know, making these beautiful, delicious recipes. Well, now, Contoso Cookbook doesn't even have to be running, right? And someone can pick, since I've implemented the search contract, someone can pick my app from all of the apps that supports search on the system, which can result in a launch of my application and again
engagement.
And people being able to find the exactly the recipe that they were looking for. Right? And again, that increases the usage of my app by kicking off like this a scenario for me, which is, you know, going ahead and making the fried rice recipe. So it increases the usage of my app, and if I provide a great experience, the satisfaction with my app. So for search, you want to think about what can I do to help people find what they're looking for as quickly as possible to launch the user scenarios that make my app great.
Yeah, and one thing that I really love about the search functionality in Windows 8 is that it kind of reminds you that you have a much broader base of things that you can search than just, for instance, if I'm going to be traveling a lot over the next couple of months delivering this jumpstart across the world. I am not complaining. But I'm going to be visiting a lot of countries that I haven't been to yet. And so as a result, I might open the Bing app and automatically search for Tokyo. And yes, I can get a lot of really special links from the Bing app for Tokyo, but really, that also reminds me that that travel app shows up in that list, and that's a much richer experience sometimes of, you know, a travel destination. And so it, again, reminds you that there are many more ways that you can engage in several other apps within the ecosystem. You're just, your world opens up to you via search in that way.
Yeah, and it really does. I think that's the best way to think about it, is it participating in a contract not only provides a great search experience within your app, but it puts you in that list, in that search pane that Windows builds of apps that support the search contract. So again, your app's in that list. People are going to grab your app. They're going to tap on it, take that search term that they, you know, maybe didn't find what they were looking for in another app. And if you help them find what they're looking for and help them complete the scenario that they wanted to complete, they're going to love your app, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go back into the slides and talk about designing a search experience. So designing a search experience for me is really about helping people find what they're looking for and kicking off one of my scenarios, right?
Yep.
Like making a recipe,
yep.
Being excited about that recipe, posting a new photo, a new review, and you know, kicking off some of my social scenarios and so on.
Exactly.
So the search contract is the way to do that. If you implement this, the search contract and provide a great experience behind the search charm within your app, that's a win. That's going to be awesome for your users. But it also results in more launches by putting my app in the list of apps that
yep.
support search, right? When the users are doing a system-wide search and picking another app to find what they're looking for. So what do I need to design here? Well, I want to design a great search results page
mm-hmm.
That helps users quickly locate exactly what they're looking for. And provide it as a consistent experience with the rest of my app as far as branding and how I present information and so on, so it looks familiar. Users get a, kind of a consistent experience with the
yep.
rest of my app. And then I also want to do search pane integration. So my app provides a great experience for the search pane. Maybe I want to supply that text to help them understand what they can search for, query
mm-hmm.
suggestions, result suggestions.
Yep.
Whatever I can do to help them find exactly what they're looking for and kick off one of my usage scenarios. So let's talk about the results page. So designing a search results page is all about, one, being consistent with the rest of your UI so it looks familiar and people see UI that's familiar with the rest of the usage that they've had within the app. But it's also about helping them zero in on exactly the results they're looking for. And in the example when we typed in Tom, we were looking for a recipe that has tomato in the ingredients,
mm-hmm.
like this taco salad, or were I looking for my friend Tom?
And it's worth pointing out here that the design that you have on this slide has the very familiar recipe tiles
yep.
that are straight from the app.
Right.
And we realized that there weren't enough results on that page.
Right.
And when a person is searching for an ingredient or something like that, they want to see as many results as possible.
Right.
And so between the evolution of that design from Photoshop into developing the app, we were able to kind of switch up those tiles and take more advantage of that real estate.
Yep.
But they still tie really closely into the brand of the app.
Right. And they also, you know, have that familiar photo and the ribbon for being marked
favorites,
as a favorite and stuff like that.
And
so
the whisk ratings and
yeah.
everything else that ties to the brand.
Yeah, so users can link back what they know about the app and, oh, that's a recipe I saw the other day. That's the
yep.
one I'm looking for, you know, yep. really, really quickly. So make it consistent with list pages, other list pages in your apps. Support great filtering and sorting to help them narrow down the results. The other thing you want to do is show the search term. So link between what they typed in that search box as far as like Tom or rice or fajitas or,
yep.
or whatever it is
yep.
back to the results that they show here. So we did that in Contoso Cookbook just by showing the search term up in quotes up in the title bar. Again, it just kind of links between
mm-hmm.
what they type to the results that they're getting, hopefully showing them, you know, a link between here's what I expected and here's what I got.
Exactly. It's confirming that the action that they tried to achieve has actually been accomplished.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to show the search term. You want to provide results filtering and scoping. And this is something that you're going to do really based on, you know, your user scenarios and your information architecture. So when we were thinking about, okay, when users are searching in our app, what might they be searching for? And we came up with, they might be searching for recipes, so
mm-hmm.
by recipe title. They might be searching for people, like,
yeah.
I want to see, you know, Tom was telling me that he made this great recipe the other day, so I know if I go and search for Tom, I'll see his activity feed, and I can see that he made, you know, the bouillabaisse the other
exactly.
day. Or ingredients. So I've got, you know, some chicken lying around, and I want to use that today. What are some of the things I can make with chicken within Contoso Cookbook? So this filtering and scoping is really going to be about your user scenarios and how do you get the results, how many ever they may be, how do you get them scoped down to the person or to the point where your user says, ah, that's exactly what I was looking for,
yeah.
and taps on it and launches your scenario. One of the things that you might want to think about within your UI is providing an advanced search experience in situations where just having a string query isn't going to be enough in your app. And this is one that I pulled from the travel application where, you know, if I'm searching for Milan and I don't find out what I was looking for in Bing, maybe I click on the travel app. And the travel app, yeah, it could show me results for cities like Milan and show me photographs and stuff like that. But it also could give me the ability to, you know, search for flights or search for hotels and so on. So here we actually see that that search term, in this case it's Rome, is actually being linked from the search pane into the advanced search form where we can build and design any kind of UI that we want to support our scenario. So here it's, you know, what's my departure, what's my return, what kind of cabin am I, economy or first class, how many passengers, and so on. So providing that link is really important because if I was in Bing and searching for Rome and then didn't find what I was looking for, my list of apps is going to include the travel app because the travel app has participated in the search contract. When users click on that, they're going to see results for Rome,
exactly.
And here maybe I want to provide them that advanced search form so they can do something that's very, you know, specific and custom for my app, like searching for flights. And again, I want to link between that launch from the search pane and, you know, the UI within my app. So again, it does a great job of not only an in-app search, but also provides me the opportunity for a system-wide search experience. So let's talk about integrating with the search pane. So within the search pane, there's a couple of opportunities, again, to help users have a great experience about search, find the information or the content that they're looking for, and kicking off your user scenarios. And the first is query suggestions, which are just auto-completions. So you can provide a list of query text based on, you know, what the user's typed in. If they type EG, maybe you're going to show them, you know, the term eggs or eggplant within Kotoso Cookbook. So they don't have to finish typing. They can just see that, get that instant satisfaction from your app that, oh, hey,
that's
here's
exactly
some things that I can search on. I'm going to go ahead and tap on
it.
The other one is results suggestions. Like in the music app, if I type in, you know, the name Lisbon, maybe it's going to show me Lisbon, Ohio as a song, Lisbon as an album, or the Lisbon Improvisation Players as an artist. And these strong query suggestions or result suggestions give me the opportunity to really show the user exact matches within my app. And I can show up to five of those suggestions within the search pane. And it really is a great example of helping them complete the scenario as quickly and as seamlessly as possible because these direct hits kind of show the user, this is exactly something. I think, you know, the app saying, I think I know exactly what you're searching for. So tap on this and I'll take you directly to that album or artist or recipe.
Exactly.
So placeholder text, this is, again, an opportunity for you to help the user complete the scenario. So you can see here for the weather app, in the weather app you search for cities to add them to your list of cities to show the weather for. In Kotoso Cookbook, we had a string that said, you know, search for a recipe, a friend, or an ingredient. Provide these placeholder texts to help users understand that when they either do a search from within your app or pick your app from the search list when they're doing a system-wide search, what can be searched for? Help them complete the scenario.
It also helps them know that, for instance, if they're in the weather app and they want to look for tornadoes, perhaps, you know, that that search is only going to return cities.
Right,
it might just guide them into exactly how you're helping them search.
Exactly. So search guidelines for creating a great experience. First, leverage the search charm for search features. Don't include search UI on the page. Users are going to expect the search charm to be hooked up and that search pane is the search UI. You know, you can have some exceptions if you have an advanced search UI that you need to supply more information beyond just the text like we saw on the travel app. Yeah, absolutely. That's a core scenario for you. You can go ahead and put search UI on there. Just link them together so when people are doing system-wide searches, they have a consistent experience across what they find in the search pane and then what they find in your app. Another exception, you know, to this kind of hard and fast rule is if your app is all about searching, like the Bing app actually provides the search bar and the search button directly on the UI. And this goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, where for core scenarios, include the UI directly on the canvas.
Exactly.
Right? And it definitely applies for search as well. I mean, for the Bing app, it makes sense to have that directly on the page.
It's kind of what it does.
Yeah, it is what it does, right? So another great example of how you can integrate a great search experience is enable type to search on the hub page. Yep. And on your search page. So as people are typing, like they're on the hub page, maybe they start typing rice, you could kick off a search there and take them to the search page for rice and show them the ingredients, the friends, the recipes that include rice. It's just a great example of, you know, if search is a core scenario, you can kick that off just from typing on the hub page or the home page.
And you can actually do that starting from the start screen as well. You can just start typing, and that search pane will pop out, and it will begin to give you suggestions on what you're looking for.
And users are going to be used to that. So if you provide them a great experience around that, they're going to use it within your app. Again, more usage, higher satisfaction, right? What you want to do within your app is when users are doing a search, preserve the state of the app and the context that they're working in. So if they're doing something and decide to do a search within your app and decide, no, that's not exactly what I was looking for, and hit the back button, that they're exactly where they were when they left, right? Just so it feels like a lightweight and low consequence experience. So they're tempted to do it more often. And then save the results page, the filters, and the scope as they're navigating. So if I, you know, do some filtering and some sorting to kind of rearrange the results to try and help me find what I need, and I say, oh, here's a recipe, and I tap on, you know, Steam Bun Bouse, and I look at it and say, no, that's not exactly what I was looking for tonight, and hit the back button, the results page should be exactly in the same state that I left it in, again, because I want users to feel like they can search and discover and go and look at the different recipes or the different results without consequence. You want them to be able to go and look and get some details and come back and maybe do some filtering and sorting. Again, whatever you can do to help them find exactly what they're looking for is going to be a great experience for them. Use the progress bar in situations where you need some processing time to go, maybe go get some results from a remote service. You can use the indeterminate progress bar if it's more than 2 seconds. If it's more than 10 seconds, you can use the determinate progress bar. These are just UI decisions that you make around communicating to the user the results of the actions that they're taking. And that's search. And again, search is a Windows. It's a core Windows experience. It's an expectation of users to be able to find exactly what they're looking for. If you create a great search experience by implementing the search contract, it's going to increase your app usage, not only from people finding what they're looking for when they're within your app, but also when they're just using Windows. They can do a search across the system, and if they remember, oh yeah, Contoso Cookbook, you know, has great recipes and provides a great search experience, I'm going to click on that or tap on that tile within the search pane, that's a launch of my app. That's usage of my app.
Exactly.
So supply query suggestions, supply result suggestions within the search panes itself to help users find exactly what they're looking for as quickly as possible, that direct hit, right? And then create a great results page to help them sort and filter to find within the results that you give them exactly what they're looking for. And designing a great user experience around that is going to help them find that data. It's going to help them find what they're looking for and kick off a usage scenario or user flow in your app, one of those user flows that makes your app great, right?
Exactly.
Okay, now let's talk about file picking experiences. And this, to me, is something that the first time I saw it just absolutely blew me away. So, you know, I'm used to on, you know, Windows or other operating systems, this concept that I can pick files. Like I can go and open a file or I can save a file to a location. But it's really, that's really about the file system. And file pickers give me file save and file open experiences from apps and to apps. And let me just show you an example of this because it's really, really compelling. So let's say that I am in the mail application and a friend of mine asked me about a recipe that I made the other day and I want to include an attachment. Oh, spoiler alert. So normally the default would be that it would, you know, Windows would open directly to documents and give me the opportunity to kind of surf through and find, you know, different files on my machine, which is kind of the expected experience. But this file open picker, this UI that you're seeing here, this is Windows, right? So this is a dialog from Windows and it defaults to show me all the files on my systems, like document pictures and so on.
Now notice this, that orange color from the rest of your Windows experience.
Yeah, exactly. And then if I want to participate in this file open picking experience, just like the Bing app has done, the camera app, Photos and SkyDrive, I can just by implementing the file open picker contract. So you can see, out of all the places I can pick from Kitoso Cookbook.
Yep.
So if I wanted to grab a picture of a recipe that I made the other day and include it in that email, mm-hmm. I can do so. And that was really, this is really interesting. So when I picked Kitoso Cookbook, that resulted in the launch of my app, mm-hmm. where I provided a UI, right, to help people find exactly what they're looking for.
Yep.
Right? And then this is, this band up here is Windows. Up at the top, you can see my mouse. This band down at the bottom is Windows, and I'm just communicating through it, or communicating via the contract. Yep. This UI here is all in the center, this beige background, is all my app.
Mm-hmm. There they are.
Right? And then there's the pictures picked from my app, from my app into mm-hmm. the Mail app. And mm-hmm. it's really, really compelling because if I've got great photos in my app, you know, people are going to think, oh, there's a photo that I saw the other day in that app, or that's where I store my photos and so on.
Or what is Bouillabaisse?
Yeah, exactly. I can participate in that contract. And again, it results in usage of my app and an affinity or a preference for my app. It's just something that users really, really love. And it just blew me away the first time that I had seen it. So how do I design an experience around that? Well, really what I want to do is I want to, one, participate in a contract. Mm-hmm. So my app shows up in the list, just like yep. we had seen for search and just like we had seen in share. And then I want to provide a consistent picking experience that's consistent with the rest of my app. Mm-hmm. So if users are used to, you know, going through lists of recipes and sorting and filtering them to find exactly what they're looking for and the way that the recipes are presented, if I provide that consistent experience, it's going to be instantly familiar to them, and they're going to know exactly what they need to do in order to go and find, you know, the photo that they're yep. looking for from the Kitoso Cookbook app. So the file open picker page design, you want to set the title of the file, of the file picker to the name of the app, mm-hmm. right? And that's just done from participating in the contract. So I can see here that this is a SkyDrive app. Mm-hmm. I also want to provide the name of the location and the navigation to help people understand not only where they are, but where they can go to, either by selecting items, or you can see some simple navigation here to go up or refresh or get details on an item.
Yeah, and I noticed that the same arrow is used here as in the header menus everywhere else in Windows 8.
Yeah, yeah, it's a consistency there. Again, users are going to know what that means. So for the file open picker command, I want to provide some commands to help people include or help people find exactly what they're looking for as mm-hmm. quickly as possible. So help them navigate, you know, the different lists of, is it in my favorites list within Kitoso Cookbook? Is it in my recipes? Or is it something, mm-hmm. you know, that I shared a photo from, it was in Chinese cuisine, it was yeah. steamed bun baos. So provide them that lightweight commanding to help them find exactly what they're looking for as quickly as possible. The UI within the file open picker is simplified compared to what you're going to provide in your actual app. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One reason is that you do have less screen real estate. You've got less pixels that you can use here because that upper band and lower band, that's actually Windows. Your app is just here in this SkyDrive example, mm-hmm. the UI in the center. So it is going to be simplified. It's also going to be more lightweight because you do want it to be a very, very simple experience of them thinking, oh, I need to open, oh, I need a picture of that recipe I made the other day. Oh, I remember I saved it to Kitoso Cookbook. So I'm just going to go and grab it from there. Make it as easy as possible for people to find exactly what they're looking for and include it in that file open picker experience. So the navigation and the commanding is going to be a little bit more simplified and needs to be very, very focused on that experience. And this is just a custom page within your app that you can use. You can reuse a lot of the code and reuse mm-hmm. a lot of the design for those pages to make that as simple as possible. Now, when file selection happens, you want to communicate to the user what that selection means. And in a file open picker, when you select an action, it includes it in, it's been picked.
Yep.
So for Contoso Cookbook, we showed a thumbnail. You could show a thumbnail as well as a text description. Mm-hmm. You want to provide that so users know, again, what the experience is going to be when they click on that attach button or they click on that open button. So here in like this photo example, I show them a thumbnail. In Contoso Cookbook, we showed a thumbnail and then a little mm-hmm. text description.
And that's a really important feature, I think, because if you're picking photos from more than one folder, you want to kind of keep up with which photos that you've picked out.
Exactly.
And so that is a clue to that.
Yeah, exactly. And whatever goes in that tray is you know, as a user, that that's going to end up being whatever information or content's going to end up in the experience. Okay? So File Save Picker works exactly the same way. You're just saving to the app. So if you wanted to, you know, be able to go into the camera app and take a picture and save it to Contoso Cookbook, the same kind of thing and the same kind of considerations, except for rather than saying, you know, you can pick from my app these file types, you say these are the file types that can be saved to my app. And then again, you provide a UI to help people find the location of where they're going to save it to. Okay. Again, here I'm just showing that I can save pictures of type PNG to my mm-hmm. app. Okay. And that's the File Open Picker contract experience. And to me, this was something the first time I saw it in early builds of Windows, I thought, wow, I can have, my app can participate, mm-hmm. you know, rather than just saving to the file system, you know, C drive.
Navigating to a folder or an Explorer window.
Yeah, they can save to my app, right? So File Open Picker contracts are the gateway into that experience, to participate in that experience. So implement File Open Picker, implement File Save Picker, to put your app in that list and then create a great experience for your users, again, consistent with the rest of your app, not only from branding, but also mm-hmm. from a UX perspective. So they have a great experience, and it's just another usage of your app, and it can increase the usage and the overall satisfaction with your app. And, you know, satisfaction, they're going to tell their friends, they're going to download your app more, you're going to be more successful.
Yep, exactly.
So the last contract that we want to talk about today is the settings contract. And again, this is something that, to me, is just another great win for users. You know, configuring applications from app to app is always different, right? Mm-hmm. And we almost send our users on a scavenger hunt uh-huh. for how to configure the app. And one of the things that the Windows UX team did a great job for is giving you really just one rock to pick up and look under in order to configure an app, and that is the settings charm. So put all of your configuration behind the settings charm, and people will know, users will know within the first few minutes of unboxing Windows 8 that if they want to configure an app, just like if they want to configure settings, they tap on the settings charm.
Yep.
Now, what are the kind of items that belong in settings? Well, it's things that, you know, won't change often. I mean, if it's a core scenario, you put that on the canvas. If it's commanding to support a scenario, maybe you put that on the app bar, behind an app bar button or a flyout. But when you're thinking about configuration, think about putting that under the settings contract and designing a UI around that. So permissions, rate and review, about, providing feedback, search preferences, help, account settings, privacy statement, sound. All of these things are examples of things that you'd want to put behind the settings contract.
And it's all in one place. You don't have to, like you said, kind of hunt and peck for it all over the UI. Where is that login
exactly.
button? How do I adjust the sound in this app?
Right, exactly. And here's a great example, the settings pane. Now, this is the settings pane. You can see that bar about two-thirds of the way down there. All the settings below that are for Windows. All the settings above that are for my app. In this case, it's the travel app. So this settings pane is a flyout that's provided by Windows. It's dismissed by Light Dismiss. So I just tap anywhere else in the UI, and it just goes away. And what I do is I implement the settings contract and provide all the entry points here, like you can see about and feedback in terms of use and privacy and so on, and then build a UX or UI behind that so users can configure my app. And one of the things that you're going to want to think about consistently across settings is implementing the contract puts these entry points into the settings pane specific to your app. And you want each of the settings for your app to apply immediately in the app. You want mm-hmm. users to get instant gratification from changing that setting.
Yeah.
And that just reinforces that they're getting the expected results once they make the change. So there's a few included as well as required settings, like the privacy statement, if you're including networking, permissions, and rate and review just come from the store itself. But everything else I want to provide to support my user scenarios of configuring my app and providing a customized experience for my users. So the first thing that I need to do within my app is design the entry point. So I need to think about all the things that, you know, I have core scenarios taken care of from, you know, layout and putting the UI together for my app. I've designed the commanding for my app bars and the flyouts and stuff like that. I've probably got a list of all of the different configuration settings for my app. I want to organize those into related sets, and those become the entry points like you see here, like about, game options, how to play. If there's anything that's miscellaneous that doesn't really fit a category, you can create like an options, kind of a catch-all bucket for those things. You want to use these descriptive and one-word labels so people can easily navigate from I want to change this to oh, here's where I change that, right? And then you want to avoid having more than four entry points just so that list doesn't get, you know, overly complex. So here's an example of the game options settings pane for the Minesweeper app. And this is the UI. This is another flyout that I'm designing the UI around. So you want it to be consistent from a branding perspective, and you want it to be very, very lightweight. So when people, you know, they can go in there, they find what they're looking for as far as the setting, they make the change, it immediately affects the app, they have the satisfaction that it had the result that they wanted in the app. So let's just look at Contoso Cookbook and a couple of other apps just as an example. So for Contoso Cookbook, just go back to home. You know, this is a sample application, so we didn't have a ton of examples, but we just hooked up a few just so we could, you know, supply a couple of examples. So Contoso Cookbook, just, you know, what the license is for the app, account settings. So let's say that we wanted to provide, you know, a logout and a logout experience, login and logout experience. Let's say if I was using, you know, a remote authentication service from my website or from my service, right? Or preferences, like being able to change the unit of measurement for a recipe. So if I was in, you know, Steam Bun Baus, if I was in Steam Bun Baus, and actually you can see here that I'm actually in metric, and I wanted to change that to English units. You can see here this is just, these are the same UI controls we covered yesterday, the same rules of layout, you know, grid and typography and so on, and the only difference that you want to think about is, one, the size of this pane, the scrolling orientation of this pane, and then just providing a UI where you can supply the user with the setting and give them the opportunity to see the results right away so they get that instant satisfaction. They know what this setting changed in the app.
Yeah, and a couple of things to point out here. The experience of, within the app-specific settings is branded towards the app. It's the same color scheme as what was in the rest of Contoso Cookbook. Sometimes it might be hard to tell because you have an orange desktop. But,
yeah, exactly.
But the settings themselves are branded after the Contoso Cookbook.
Right.
And also, you see that change immediately. And we added an animation on that units of measurement change so that you could see that your eye goes to exactly where you expect the change to happen.
Exactly. Let's go back to the slides and then talk about designing these panes. So again, that settings pane itself is Windows. And you supply the entry points, so you populate those. When people touch those and go into the actual setting panes for your app, that's just another flyout. You want to consistently brand that, and you know, as far as color, as far as you know, making the individual settings kind of match the expected results within your UI. So you want to present the content. First, the pane can be either 346 or 646 pixels. Think about the width. Use the smaller width if you can, just so it doesn't obscure the app, so again, people can see the results of making changes. Present the content from top to bottom. This is a vertical scroll. You want to keep these settings fairly simple. So, you know, you need to be concerned if you have more than two pages of scrolling within your settings. And then display them on a white background. This just kind of makes it more clear as to what these particular settings mean and kind of calls out, like you can see here, I'm changing different theme colors, so I want that on a white background, so those colors kind of are just very apparent. Okay, so designing the header, use the back button to help people navigate back to the settings pane with all the different entry points. Set the title according to what the entry point was, and then provide the app logo. Mm-hmm. Like here, it's for calendar. And again, this just helps people recognize your app and recognize the branding of your app. And then a couple of don'ts. Don't duplicate functionality within required settings. The required settings that are supplied, like rate and review, don't duplicate those because it's just going to confuse the users. Don't include features within settings that are part of a typical user flow within your app. Those should be on the canvas or within commanding UI within your app. This is really about configuration. Don't use the settings pane to navigate your app. You should be doing that in your navigation design. Don't use a custom flyout size. Use the standard sizes so people get an expected experience, a consistent experience across apps. And then don't add confirmation buttons. The effect of the change that they make should happen directly and right away. And it should do it in such a way that the user is comfortable that the change had the effect that they wanted it to.
Yep.
Okay? So that's settings. And again, the settings charm is just another great example of some of the forethought that the Windows UX team put into the product.
Yeah.
You know, rather than making settings, you know, a scavenger hunt for users, they built it into the charms bar. So all users have to do is know that when they need to configure the app, they, you know, swipe from the side and click on the settings charm. And they can either configure Windows or they can configure, you know, your app. So design a great UI. It's vertically scrolling. Simplify, you know, what the entry points are. Simplify the UI within it. Mm-hmm. Consistently brand it so people know that it's your app. And then when they make changes, have those changes take effect immediately, because when they take effect immediately, the users get that instant satisfaction within your app. Okay? So that's contracts, charms, and extensions. I know we went a little bit long today. There's a lot to cover.
A lot of great stuff to cover.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to cover, but some really compelling experiences that you can build in your app. And this, to me, is, again, a really cool thing about Windows 8 is that I have these opportunities to increase the usage and the satisfaction of my app by participating in share, by participating in search. But I also have this really cool, creative opportunity to provide some really great user experiences that reinforce my user flows, that reinforce what my app is great at. So it's a really great experience. Look at the contracts extensions up at design.windows.com and learn about these, and again, design for them so users have a great experience.
Exactly.
Awesome. All
right. So we'll be back in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about tiles and notifications.
Awesome. Thanks.